got too much to do. It's got you feeling blue. Put a little flag in your day.
Subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You know that feeling when someone shows up for you just when you need it most? Yeah, I mean, we all need that. That's what Uber's all about. Not just a ride or dinner at your door. It's how Uber helps you show up for the moments that matter. Because showing up can turn a tough day around or make a good one even better. Whatever it is, big or small, Uber is on the way so you can be on yours. Uber, on our way.
Gardening on the Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Tier Lawn Country Life. Gardens are our second nature with 15 garden centres nationwide.
We're joined now by Chelsea gold medalist, garden designer par excellence, German Gavin. German, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, you've taken us to Italy, you've taken us all over the place, France and so on. You're taking us just down the road.
Just home, really. So last week when I was on my way into you, I stopped by a printer's up in Baggot Street to collect some garden design work. And I wandered through Stephen's Green. And I just realised on a sunny day in spring, it is among the most glorious gardens in the world. So why not talk about that?
You better bring us back to the very beginning of St. Stephen's Green, because it wasn't a garden forever.
No, it wasn't the garden. Indeed, it was marshland. So there was a river, or probably still is a river, running underneath it. And it was very swampy and very marshy. And it was a bit of a dump for the city. It was a place of execution, a place where witches were burnt, the gallows were there, and whippings took place there. So it wasn't kind of highly regarded until the 1600s. It was named after a St. Stephen's Church, which would have been around the area of Mercer's Hospital, and there was a leper hospital in that area too. So that's where it originally derived its name.
Now, when did the city council or the corporation take it in charge?
Around the 1630s, they needed money because there was lots of wars going on, so they hit on a scheme to make this land that they were in control of generate some income. And they decided to create this park and also to create 90 plots of land where people could build homes.
So they would flog these, would they?
They'd flog them and they'd create a wall around this area, and if you bought one of these plots of land, you got a key into this park. But you had obligations to it, and the main obligation was that you planted sycamore trees, so that would help to have the first planting in the park. So whoever bought it, and it was professional people, it was butchers, it was bakers, it was candlestick makers at that stage who bought those plots.
Now, why sycamores? They're like weeds.
They
grow so easily in our climate.
They do, but we were in the days when, you know, plants weren't as readily available. So a lot of the plants that we're familiar with hadn't come through the Victorian age of plant collection. So they were available, but also they would have cut down on the noise of the city of
beyond. So the owners of these plots had to plant sycamores within the green.
Within the green, exactly. Within the green. Along too. The wall, along the boundary wall. Yeah. And inside was generally a flat landscape. So the first gardeners weren't employed there until a few years after the park opened in 1670. And soon after that, you had the evolution of the fancier area of the city. So 1708, I think, Grafton Street, and 1720s, Dawson Street. And all of a sudden, this became an incredibly popular place to be seen, to walk, to promenade, and that was the idea.
And they had created walks, which are probably the same sort of tracks that we see today.
Yes, so by the 18th century, it had become the height of fashion. They had pathways. The Bow Walk was one, the French Walk, Monk's Walk, and Leeson's Walk. So this is where everybody would get dressed up in their fineries and do what they did in London's avenues and parks, or the parks of Paris, because Dublin was a very prominent city then.
Now, it became a place for some names we know to disport themselves.
Yeah, yes, you had the Duke of Wellington and the other guy who's Copperface Jack, who was the Attorney General of the time. I didn't put him down in the notes, but I was listening to his escapades on the way and how he used... Do you know how he got the name Copperface?
Mm-hmm.
His red face from drinking in all the inns. He employed two guys to stand outside, to remain sober, stand outside the inn and to bring him home and to make sure he got home safely. Because it was very interesting getting home safely round this area, especially from the street that we're now in. This was the centre of prostitution, Diggs Lane. In Dublin at that stage. And remember, there would have been no streetlights, so there were people intent on doing danger. Little children were really at risk from stripping, which was a very odd thing, because if they were from wealthy houses, they'd be dressed up in wealthy finery, and women would trap them, would kidnap them for an hour or two, strip them of all their clothes and let them off. And in, you know, September, October or January in Dublin, that was a very risky
thing. So the decline set in.
The decline set in, the park, so it had its heyday when all the people paraded in their finery, but soon the decline did set in, the walls started tumbling down and rubbish was being dumped. And then the army started using it as a place for gun practice and battle practice and whatever. So it was no longer a desirable place to be seen.
Now, there's a great member of the Guinness family, Lord Ardilaun, who decided to give something back in exchange for all the drinking that the Dubliners were doing.
That's right. So he would have been the great-grandson of Arthur Guinness, and he's particularly associated with the west of Ireland. So Ashford Castle would have been his big domain. But at one stage, he owned the Aran Islands, so big landowner, but also was very much in keeping with the tradition of the family, was very good to the people of Dublin. And he decided that this park shouldn't be for the few, and he decided that he'd make an offer to the people in charge of it. He'd buy the land, he'd settle the debts, and he would employ a garden designer and create a new park for the betterment of the city and for the health of the inhabitants, and all the inhabitants, not just the people who lived around.
So it was properly designed and it had a waterfall. And the water came from where?
This is extraordinary, from the Grand Canal. So it was piped underground from the Grand Canal in
Portobello. Probably the basin there,
The basin there. It came in, it fed the top of the cascades. This was a pulmonite cascade. Pulmonite was a material, a stone-like material that had been invented in Britain, and it bound big rocks together, and they were able to form rocks and grottos and this amazing cascade. So the water poured in to the lake from there and then was fed back around Ballsbridge into the canal. And it was a revelation, because remember, you're going from a very flat landscape where you could see over the other side of the green to something with contours and with hills and with bridges and a 3-acre lake.
Now, there are all sorts of adornments to the St. Stephen's Green now, like the bandstand, and you've got various statuary around the place.
So all built, all commissioned by Lord Ardilaun at that stage. He'd been brought up on St. Stephen's Green in what is now
Foreign
maybe
Affairs, isn't
the
it?
Department of Foreign Affairs. Yeah. That was one of the Guinness houses. So he was very fond of it. So he created, when he commissioned the new design from somebody who was designing parks like Palmerston Park all around the city, he filled it with features, including a very long herbaceous border that starts around the Leeson Street area and goes in towards the centre. So you had the bandstands, you had the park keeper's cottages, all done in the style of the day.
Now, you mentioned the forces using the green for target practice in its more scruffy incarnation, but it got to see gunfire again.
It did in 1916. So Countess Markovich had her own kind of battalion of troops. They went in to St. Stephen's Green to take that, and they dug trenches, but they discovered that it wasn't the smartest thing to do, because the British troops went into the Shelburne Hotel and just shot down on them. So Countess Margaret and her troops retreated to the College of Surgeons, where they held out until Easter.
And she is commemorated in the green.
She is, along with many many of the people associated, indeed, Lord Ardalan also.
I suppose I should ask you about the planting.
Planting is just kind of beautiful trees and shrubs and herbaceous perennials. So it's a 22-acre site. There's 24 species of trees. 54% are classified as mature. 30% are made up of those same sycamores, holly and London plane, which is a great city tree. And the tallest tree is the London plane tree in there, measuring 25
feet. Now, you sent me loads of pictures, aerial pictures, and there's one I'm fascinated by, which is of the gates at the corner of St. Stephen's Green and Grafton Street. But there is the precursor of the Lewis trundling along.
That's right. That's right. So that big archway was built to commemorate, I think, in 1907 to commemorate the Second Boer War and
the relief of Ladysmith or something like that.
That's right. Yeah. So it's extraordinary history everywhere, but it remains that design that was done in the 1870s, absolutely beautiful. And as I say, maybe not so much on a day like today, but around this time in spring and summer, it just sings. And the Office of Public Work do a wonderful job keeping that kind of Edwardian and Victorian bedding seams going, those fountains that are in the middle and the bandstands all in great nick. Right.
Jimmer, thank you very much. You'll put those pictures up on your website, I presume.
I will. I'll put them up on Instagram.
On your Instagram. Great stuff. Jimmer Gavin, thank you very much. And that is all we have time for.
You know that feeling when someone shows up for you? Just when you need it most? Yeah, I mean, we all need that. That's what Uber's all about. Not just a ride or dinner at your door. It's how Uber helps you show up for the moments that matter. Because showing up can turn a tough day around or make a good one even better. Whatever it is, big or small, Uber is on the way. So you can be on yours. Uber, on our way.